9 o'clock, we can start now. Welcome our first speaker, Theo.
Okay, good morning everyone. Thank you for the organisers to invite me here today. I'm going to be discussing our approach to custom hardware in the loop tests to assure our defence of Linux as a feasible real-time operating system. So I'm Theodore Tucker, I'm a software engineer at CodeThink. I joined in June of 2024, and in my spare time I'm a student at the UK's Open University studying combined science, technology, engineering and maths. So what we're going to go through today, I'm going to go through what it is exactly we're trying to test, what we're trying to measure, how we measure it, the results we've come across, and how we communicate those results to our colleagues with the Trustable Software Framework from Eclipse. So let's go to the starting point. The starting point of what we're trying to measure is we're considering Linux as a component in a safety-related system running on a multi-threaded, multi-core processor, which this means that in typical safety applications you want good real-time guarantees, and those are much easier to generate on a microcontroller running something like a single-threaded time-triggered architecture than they are on a multi-core operating system with something as complex as Linux. So to meet, we have to evidence that for Linux to be feasible, it has to meet those same real-time hard constraints as a microcontroller running something much simpler. And we're working towards certifying that under IEC 61508 as a safety function of Linux. So this is a very important property that the system needs to have, and we need to measure and assure that for every iteration, every build of our operating system. So how does Linux then offer real-time capabilities? Well, since kernel 3.14, it's provided a scheduling policy called shed deadline. So scheduling policies are how the kernel balances time on the CPU between different competing threads. And shed deadline is the only scheduling policy, well, one of two scheduling policies in the kernel that provides real-time guarantees. So this means that the requirements for the runtime and period of processes, these are specified in nanoseconds rather than arbitrary nice values which are giving processes priority relative to one another. So to say that we want a particular thread to have these real-time constraints and to use the shed deadline kernel policy for that, we use a syscall called shed set atta in our thread, and when we're spawning the thread we use shed set atta, and we specify the period, the deadline and the runtime for that thread. So the period says how often should I be on the CPU, the deadline says within each period by what point in that period should I have finished my execution, and the runtime says what is my worst case total execution time, and if we exceed that total execution time the kernel will send us the SIGEX CPU signal and kick us off the CPU. So the kernel's got to balance the demands of multiple threads all calling shed set atta and all providing these real-time constraints that they have, and to balance those it performs the admissions test. The admissions test says it runs every time you call shed set atta, and the kernel calculates whether it can balance this thread with all the other threads that are already on the system, and if it can't balance the real-time requirements of this new thread, then it will refuse to admit it. It will refuse to schedule it altogether. So this is a diagram just to show what I meant by that. So we have, so this is CPU time along the x-axis. We have a period, each period, rusty worker, which I'll come to later. This is our process under investigation. It gets this block of green runtime, it gets it every period, and it gets it before the end of the deadline in every period. It doesn't matter when it happens, when it gets its runtime within the deadline, as long as it happens before the deadline, that's satisfactory. So how are we going about measuring deadline scheduling then? Well, we're measuring deadline scheduling in the context of Control OS. Control OS is a Linux distribution based on the latest upstream kernel with a user land from the Free Desktop SDK project, and we're measuring it, and we're measuring scheduling performance on two hardware platforms with two different architectures. We use an Intel NUC for AMD 64 architecture and a ROC 5B for ARCH 64 architecture. These are representative target hardware platforms. Obviously, our clients would bring their own hardware into play. And within our Control OS images, we have a Rust program called Rusty Worker. And Rusty Worker is a program to exercise the deadline scheduler. So it has two threads. It has a monitor thread which starts, and then it spawns a worker thread by calling shedsetatter, but the critical thing is it allows us as the user to specify the period, deadline and runtime that we want the process to have. So it lets us customise what's going to shedsetatter to be a representative critical process. Worker thread, in the meantime, while it's spinning, it just does some simple numerical calculations on the CPU, but the important thing is measuring how it comes on and off the CPU. And it measures when it's coming off on and off the CPU and measures its own runtime. And it sends those measured periods and runtimes to an onboard safety monitor, which is another Rust application that is designed to trigger an external mitigation if the scheduling were to be faulty outside of specified parameters. That might indicate a fault with the system that might need the system to be rebooted. But we also log all the periods and runtimes for hours and hours as the system runs to the systemd journal so that these can be downloaded from the system and analysed later. But the problem that we came across was that when the Rusty Worker is measuring its own period and runtime, it's using the same clock that the kernel used to constrain period and runtime. So there's a common cause of failure here. If the kernel was lying, it would be lying both to itself and to Rusty Worker, and we wouldn't know the difference. So we thought we need a way to get a signal out of the system somehow during scheduling so that we can have an external clock measure those periods and runtimes as well, so we can determine whether the kernel was lying to us or not. So that's what this looks like. So if we see this Rusty Worker runtime, so this is the time on the CPU for our mock critical process, if we customize that critical process such that when it starts running it sends a signal, and when it stops running it sends another signal, and it keeps doing that all the time, we can measure the runtime, which is the time difference between the started signal and the completed signal, but we can also get a measure of the period, which will be the time difference between one started signal here and the next started signal here. So all the while that the critical process is measuring itself and logging to a journal, we can have a piece of hardware listening in and taking second measurements of the scheduling performance. So to do this, we went about designing some custom hardware. We used KiCad for that, and we based our hardware around the Raspberry Pi Pico. So this is the PCB that we use. You'll notice it has two Raspberry Pi Pico microcontrollers. The one on the right is the one that's actually listening to those signals and performing arithmetic with its own clock to determine periods and runtime. And the one on the left is responsible for flashing firmware to the one on the right at the start of every CI job, so that we have good assurance of where our measurements are coming from. We have traceability of the firmware that was used to generate those measurements. So, as I say, the one on the right, this is the verifier. We have here two UART inputs, so the signals are sent over UART. The top one is at RS232 voltage level, and the bottom one is at TTL logic level. That's just because the ROC 5B and the NUC, which are our two target hardware platforms, they have different voltage levels for their serial ports. And every 10 seconds it computes the mean, maximum and minimum period and runtime based on the signals it has received on the UART, and it sends those out as YAML over USB CDC. And then the probe, we use the open source debug probe firmware that the Raspberry Pi Foundation produces, which receives binaries from the test runner and flashes them at the start of each test over serial wire debug protocol. Because it turns out that the Raspberry Pi debug probes that you can buy, they're running open source firmware and have basically identical hardware to a Raspberry Pi Pico, so we thought if we integrated them on one PCB, that aids maintainability. So the firmware then, the Pico on the right, the one that's doing the measurements, this needs firmware on it, and we chose to write that in Rust. We used the embedded HAL and RP2040 HAL crates, and we architected that firmware such that as soon as a signal is received on the UART from the Rusty worker on the device under test, it will trigger an interrupt. It will immediately take the monotonic timestamp from the Pico's clock, and it will enqueue that into a buffer. And then in the main loop of the program, when it's not been interrupted, it will dequeue all those timestamps, it will perform the computations on them, and it will produce a YAML output like this with our measurements down to microsecond precision. So we say the runtime and the period, how many samples we had, and the minimum, maximum, and mean. The reason we chose Rust compared to the alternative, which is C, is that Rust requires far more verbose peripheral initialization code, or at least it does when you use the RP2040 HAL crate. And that means we have better understanding of exactly what the code is doing and exactly the timings and precision of our measurement. So, for example, in our Rust code, we have to declare up front the frequency we want to use on the crystal oscillator of the Raspberry Pi Pico, and we do that in code, and it comes out to 125 megahertz. And then that makes us realise, well, if we're taking the reciprocal of that, then that means if we're trying to measure a critical process which has a period on the order of magnitude of hundreds of nanoseconds, which is about the reciprocal of 125 megahertz, you know, actually, that's inappropriate because it's only a few clock cycles of the microcontroller. Other benefits of Rust is that you get compile time guarantees of type memory safety, and actually, thanks to the type system in Rust and the way the crates have been constructed, any invalid hardware configurations will be rejected as type errors at build time, which lets you catch problems with the firmware a lot more easily. And lastly, the embedded Rust toolchain is far, far easier to handle than the embedded C toolchain. It doesn't go and download stuff from the internet at build time. You can use the native Rust compiler, and when you're building that Rust compiler, there's only two lines in the configuration you need to change to specify you want to target the Thumb V6M architecture of the Raspberry Pi Pico for cross-compilation. So about building that firmware, one of the things we assert as part of the quality assurance of our project is that all the testing tools need to be built with the same strict guarantees about reproducibility and provenance as the operating system itself. So for that purpose, we use Apache BuildStream, which I won't go into detail about, but it's just to show that our builds, all our operating system builds and our firmware builds, are declarative. So we specify which Rust toolchain we want to use, we specify which linker we want to use, and we simply specify the source code. So this is where the source code is coming from. We specify all the crates we want to use, and then we just specify an install command, and this goes straight into the Docker image that our test runner uses. And a benefit of this is that one of my colleagues will be speaking about later today, is because we're using a standard build system, you get a software bill of materials for this for free. So that will aid your traceability story. So looking at a recap of the test architecture then, we have our two PICOs. We have the Rusty worker sends a signal to a verifier PICO, which does the measurements, and through a Python test library, these end up in an open search data lake to be analysed later. And then from the second path coming along the bottom, the Rusty worker measures its scheduling itself. It also reports that to the test library through the systemd journal, and that ends up in the data lake. So in our data lake, for the same scheduling events, we have two measurements, one made by the process itself and one made by our external hardware. So what do our results say? So we've been running this now for about 9 months. We have hundreds of thousands of measurements in our data lake, and according to our external measurements, the kernel isn't lying. We're assured that our self-measured, our self-reported measurements are accurate. On the NUC, we can say they're accurate to within plus or minus 100 microseconds. On the ROC5B, we can say they're accurate to within plus or minus 10 microseconds. And that is a factor of the UART on the ROC5B being a peripheral on the same chip as the SoC, whereas on our NUC, our UART is a PCIe peripheral elsewhere on the motherboard. So we use Jupyter Notebooks each week to analyse the previous week's tests and check our performance. And this is a graph on the right just to show it's come across all right on the projector, but the distribution in orange is the self-measured distribution. For the runtime, the mean runtime of a critical process, and the distribution in blue is from our external hardware, and you can see they line up very, very neatly. And some other interesting results we've got from this is that, as I say, we found that the external measurements are more accurate on the ROC5B than the NUC, because we understand the hardware differences between where the UART lies in the system, how close it is to the CPU. But we also saw that during the development of Control OS, during that period, my colleague Matteo introduced the preempt RT kernel option, which means that kernel threads are allowed to be interrupted as they run, so this is supposed to give better real-time performance, and we actually found that our external measurements got less accurate when we enabled preempt RT, and we understand the reason why for that is because K threads are involved in writing to serial ports, and if they're getting interrupted, then the time taken for a signal to get out of the system is no longer deterministic. So finally, I'm going to come to how we communicate these results to stakeholders, and we use the Eclipse Trustable Software Framework to do this on Control. So the idea of the Trustable Software Framework in brief is that it gives you some very high-level assertions about what's required for a quality software project, and then it gives you tools to map measurements you make of your own system against those assertions. Each assertion is given a score between 0 and 1. It's a decimal number between 0 and 1 about how confident we are that score is true, and we aggregate the scores for low-level evidence items to give an overall trustable score for the project. So if we want to, for each CI run that's using this external hardware and putting data in OpenSearch, we want to make assertions for that exact commit of Control, because we're building a commit, we're testing a commit, and then we're generating a report for a commit, we can use Python code, which will automatically check OpenSearch, compute the results, do the same computations we're doing in our Jupyter notebooks, and provide a confidence score between 0 and 1. For example, here saying that the absolute error, according to the data we have in our data lake, for this particular shard of control on NUC, we're asserting that that delta is less than 100 microseconds, and you can see it's got a score of 1 because the validator has checked the data and produced that score, and we get a HTML report visible to stakeholders and engineers for each iteration. So what does our argumentation look like then? So at the very top are two of those very high-level objectives, as I said, the Trustable Software Framework dictates for particular software projects. On the left-hand side, we have argumentation to say that all our tests all the tools we use for our tests are reproducible, and we're reproducible because we're using embedded Rust toolchain in BuildStream. So we have intermediate argumentation, but fundamentally we're saying we're looking at a CI job that tests the reproducibility of the image. A validator's looking at whether that passed or failed, and it's producing a score that flows through intermediate argumentation along with other items to provide a score for this high-level assertion that the build and test environments are constructed from mirrored sources. And then on the right-hand side, the bit that we're at, that the part of the graph that's concerned with the part of the graph that's concerned with the quality of the software, we look at our open search data. We have intermediate argumentation. We feed that into an STPA analysis, a risk analysis of the project, to provide the final goal that we've identified a risk, and that risk was the kernel might be lying to us, and we've provided evidence to show actually we're happy with that risk because we've got evidence that the kernel isn't. So in conclusion, I'd say external measurements have provided great confidence in our analysis of Linux deadline scheduling, and it's meant we have a deeper understanding of the kernel and a deeper understanding of the hardware we're using to make those measurements, which means that our risk analyses will therefore be more informed. And you can see all the different pieces of open source software and hardware that we've orchestrated together so that we can do complex hardware in the loop tests to prove that an open source kernel like Linux on a multi-core system is suitable for a hard real-time applications with hard real-time constraints in industry. And lastly, to say that the trustable software framework, the point of that is that it allows you to communicate those results to the stakeholders and also to engineers. As engineers, we're looking at the bottom of the graph, we're looking at those statements that say the difference was less than 100 microseconds or whatever, but stakeholders, they're looking at the top of the graph and asserting that yes, we've done a proper analysis of the risks in our product. So thank you all for your attention, thank you for the organisers, that's all I have to say today. If there's any questions, please. John?
On behalf of CodeDig, we'd like to thank the Eclipse Foundation. Last year, we had indicated that we were contributing and opening the project up. We did. Unfortunately, there were some infrastructure issues that we had to work through over the last 12 months. But we can claim, unfortunately, it happened after the slides got submitted. But on the right-hand side, if you go to eclipsefoundation.org, you will find the Trustable project fully there. The full repos are now up. The change history for the last year is now available. We look forward to committers coming and helping us advance the project.
Okay, that's great. Any questions for Theo?
No.
One question.
Yes,
go ahead.
So you're using separate clocks so you can confirm that they're not affecting each other, that they're separately being measured and so on.
Yes.
Do you have like any initial stage where you're checking to see whether or not there's significant clock drift between them naturally? And whether or not you're then taking that into account into your statistics. I mean, I can only imagine it would improve the results rather than worsen them, but is that something that is being done as well?
So the question was about whether we can measure the drift between those clocks, the clock of the Pico and the clock of Linux, before to improve the accuracy of the test. I'd say the answer to that is that we've not found it necessary as such. I think this external measurement is only there as a sanity check. But performance, these differences of on the order of magnitude of tens of microseconds are acceptable enough that we can attribute it to the hardware, to the UART, to the actual time. I mean, we're getting quite close with a baud rate of 115/200. We're getting pretty close to actually the time it takes for the bits to get along the wire. But it's something I believe we have got an issue open to be, for example, connecting these to a more accurate and precise oscilloscope to be calibrating our external measurements as such.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.